Called Polycast. I don't suppose you're a Civilization fan.
Civilization?
A computer game.
No.
I'm Dan.
I'm Bautha.
I'm Mark.
Derek Paxton. Kale from Fall from Heaven.
Tony Keel, known as Garrett Sidzaka, creative Second Revolution.
Welcome to Polycast, now with 100% less Imran. Not joining me is Imran. It is the official podcast of a Bolton Civilization site, now the home of girlsplayingciv.com.
Woohoo!
Woo!
Also not joining us for some reason is Mackie, but she's probably playing Beyond the Sword, or on a date, or both.
Or it could be both.
Ooh. Girls Playing Civ.
I found out a long time ago that those Civilization references don't work when I'm trying to get romantic with the wife. She's not buying any of it. I tell her I want to invade your borders, and she just looks at me and says, "You're going to need a bigger army than that."
Nice.
We begin and end with an interview. Leading the way is our featured discussion with Kale on his Civilization 4 mod Fall from Heaven, followed by Game Flood contest winners in the news. Then in the modcast, the only girl unit in Civilization, reworking Civ4's vassal system, and in the Senate, best national wonder combination and policy towards desert, ice, mountain, and tundra terrain. Finally, we turn to the first of a three-part chat with Greg Hildebrandt, the artist who drew the poster included exclusively in copies of Civilization 4 Gold Edition.
This can all be re-edited to make it sound completely continuous later.
Yes, I do it all the time.
It's true.
Yeah. How do you think we have a show every 2 weeks?
That's only an hour. As brief as possible, what is Fall from Heaven 2?
As brief as possible, it's a game. If you'd like me to elaborate a little more.
Yes.
It's a dark fantasy mod for Civilization 4. Dark fantasy in that our characters are typically flawed. We have the princess rule going on, which is anything that could appear on the wall of a little girl's bedroom, we don't want to have in the game. So there's no unicorns or no cute gremlins, no Justin Timberlake. Those would all be right out. We wouldn't allow them. The focus of the game is a lot more on the units than in Civilization 4, which is typically concerned with your armies and your empires. Fall from Heaven still keeps that focus, but takes it a little more down to the individual units that you have. So we have heroes and units that have a lot more effect on the game than you would have in a typical Civilization 4 game.
Also from Nickus Knight, who is the target audience for your mod?
I guess I've been a big fan of Civilization for a long time, and I wanted to make a mod that would take Civilization even further than it does now. So there's a lot more detail in it. There's a lot more complexity in it. It would be very hard for somebody to pick up and play Fall from Heaven just right out of the gate if they haven't played Civilization before. It's even kind of a steep learning curve for players that are very familiar with Civilization 4 and are trying to pick it up and play it for the first time. There's a lot of stuff in it. And we know that that makes it a little hard to learn, but the advantage we get out of that is we think there's a lot of replayability in the game, so you can play this game for months and years because there's a lot of different aspects to it, a lot of complexity in it.
Another one from Nicky's Knight. What are some of your favorite new features in this version of the scenario?
The latest version of Fire Phase of Fall from Heaven has what we call the Armageddon Counter. As the game goes on, as horrific things happen in the game, the Armageddon counter goes up, and as good things happen, the Armageddon counter goes on. And the game purpose this serves is that you typically see a little bit of a rigor mortis in the late game when the world gets so full and everybody kind of stops moving and the late game gets kind of dull because of it. And that's one of the major things that Beyond the Sword did, was it gave us corporations and what was the other big late game thing? Espionage.
Yeah.
To help us with that late game rigor mortis. Well, looking at that from a fantasy side, we put the Armageddon counter in there so that the game goes on. The Armageddon counter either tends to rise or stay low if you make efforts to do that. And if it gets higher and higher, bad things start happening to the world. Plagues hit the land. Very powerful barbarian units are released in the world that affect all the civilizations equally. So even if you decide to kind of wall yourself up in your own little empire and ignore the rest of the world, you will be responsible for the effects of that Armageddon counter. Those barbarian creatures could come looking for you, or if a blight hits the land, it's going to hit your countries too. So it kind of gives the players a little bit of an impetus to get out of their front doors and go do something. If they want to take control of that Armageddon counter, if they want to get it lower, make sure these events don't hit, they might want to put a little army together and go out there and destroy the holy city of one of the powerful evil religions so they can get that Armageddon counter down, or wipe out that demonic army so that they get that back under control again. Or they may decide they want to go the opposite way with it, and they want to send out some disciples and spread the evil religion out there and get that Armageddon counter up and trust that, you know what, it's going to hit everybody and it's going to be destruction, and I think I can survive through it better than anyone else can.
That's awesome.
That sounds pretty awesome, yeah.
If you go out and destroy those demonic armies, is that just then stopping the Armageddon counter from getting worse, or can it act so it kind of stays neutral relative to everything else, or does that actually improve?
Yeah, that's a good question. It can go both ways, but going out and destroying the demonic army is just one of the things that affects that counter. If you raise cities, the demonic army could be gone, but if you go into another civilization's land and you raise their 9 population city, just burn it to the ground, that Armageddon counter is going to go up. There's a lot of things that affect the counter, so no, it's never going to stay quite static no matter what you do, but there are some big things that you can do to try to keep it under control.
Okay.
The players are a part of the world.
How has the Civ Online community influenced the development of Fall from Heaven? All from Nikki's Knight.
There's been a lot that we've drawn out of the community. I probably spend about a quarter to half the time I spend in my modding time just reading posts or responding to posts on Civ Fanatics. And you could argue that that's a good or a bad thing just based on, you know what, it'd be more efficient if I actually spent that time working on the game rather than talking about the game. But what that leaves us with is at the end we have a mod that has gone through a lot of refinement and has had a lot of very smart people's input all involved in the final product. So we get a lot of refinement. I typically like to just work with the team as we come up with the goals for what this phase are or what we want to do. And then what I found the community is really good at is once we've implemented the base on what those goals look like, then they're very good at telling us, yeah, I like the idea of the Armageddon counter or whatever it is, but when this particular piece happens, it's just not all that fun, or there's something that we could do to make it more enjoyable for the player. And that's the real magic of making the game enjoyable. So we get those ideas in. I think we've had just a ton of posts. It's 75,000 posts about Fall from Heaven on Civ Fanatics. I used to read all of them. I don't necessarily do that anymore, so I'm sorry for those out there that are posting just because there's so many. But you can't deny the effect of all the ideas that have been submitted, and a lot of them have gone just directly into the game. And at this point, it's been such a collaborative process. It's hard to tell when you try to go back and see, hey, whose idea was this? Where did this idea come from? It really is a merger of initial inspiration for it to refinement of the idea to playtest feedback and then further iterative refinements. There are fingerprints of the community all over Fall from Heaven. I think it's one of the reasons we have so many posts is a lot of people like the fact that they can throw an idea out there and then the next version will come out and their idea will be in there.
Oh, Derek, why don't you have some of your minions read some of those other posts? What do you think I have Wouter around for? Wait, what?
What? I read?
We've also had design contests that the winner of the design contest, whatever it was that they made and the community votes on what they like best, it goes straight into the mod too. So there's a good few spells, units, wonders in the game that come from those contests, which has been great.
And what do the winners of those contests get?
Just the fact that they get to see their spells, units, and wonders in the game, and a hearty thank you from me. If they're waiting for their prizes, then just stand out by their mailbox and just keep waiting, and maybe someday it'll show up.
That's not nice.
Send all hate mail, too.
Oh, that's another thing. I get enough hate mail already. I'll get, maybe once or twice a month, I'll get some email from some mad fan because for multiple reasons. My favorite was I got a private message from somebody who claimed to be angry because we use real demon names, real demon and angel names in the mod. A lot of them are from Judeo-Christian mythology. And so he came back and he posted to me and he said he just found out that these are real demon names he's been playing with, and he thinks these demons have possessed his computer, and when he's sleeping at night he can hear the voices coming out of his computer and they're talking to him. So
Catharsis asks, how did you come up with the backstory for Fall from Heaven 2?
A lot of the backstory is based on several Dungeons & Dragons campaigns that I ran over about 17 years of time. D&D game is typically based on the characters and an individual story that's going on. So all of the Empire level stuff and the leaders of the Empires and the mythology and the gods and these powerful legends were all kind of backstory to the D&D game that was happening. And it was kind of neat when I went to make that world into a Civilization IV game, I kind of had to flip that mirror, and now I'm looking at the world from the perspective of the civilization leaders and what's going on at a global scale, and the individual stories of the people moving around in that world, of these minor heroes and such, became the Pedia entries that you see now. You go in and read some Pedia entry, it has a lot of detail about what happened to this particular character, and the reason is, in a lot of those cases, that we have so much detail about those individual characters, is that those were the main characters for the D&D game that we played there. So that was the initial creation of the world, and since that time, though, we have three writers on the Fall from Heaven team that are always contributing new material, and we're always massaging and adding to that original formula to kind of broaden it. I'm waving my arms back and forth right now as hand gestures to show you what I mean, but none of you are seeing
it. This is not a visual medium there.
Not
there.
Really.
Oh, trust me, I have a face made for podcasts, so that works well for me.
Yeah, so do I. That's why this is a podcast and not a vidcast. So to expand on that a little bit, how did you get into Civ?
I had no knowledge or inclination to do a mod before Civilization IV was released. I'm a huge fan. Civilization's always been my favorite game, and I've spent more hours on that playing Civilization than all other video games put together. I went out and bought Civilization IV on the day it was released, and I installed it like just about everybody else. And as I was looking through the manual, I saw the modability of the game in Python and thought, wow, that's really cool. And I'd always kind of wanted to learn how to program. Here's something that I can do that'll teach me a little bit of programming. After playing my first week or so of Civilization IV pretty much nonstop, I then started to dig into the modding capabilities of it. And I think it was 6 weeks after Civ 4 came out that I put that first version of Fall from Heaven, which was pretty sad at the time. But, you know, after the game's only been out for 6 weeks, people were kind of excited.
Yeah, that's
to
pretty
see anything.
Impressive, actually, if you have no prior modding experience.
Right after posting that first version, I just got a ton of positive feedback, much more than I expected. I always thought I'd kind of make this little fantasy-based version of Civ 4 as the game I kind of always wanted to play, but I never really saw anybody make, and I would enjoy it. And if a couple other people on the internet enjoyed it too, then so much the better. And I was just amazed, and still am amazed to this day at how popular it's been and all the kind of response that we've gotten back. I never knew it would be possessing some guy's computer and talking to him while he slept. I had no idea.
So who do you call for an exorcism on a computer? That's a good question. Does regular tech support handle that or what?
You possessed my computer for about a week or two while I was trying to beat your mod.
Oh, sure, sir. We'll take care of that for you. Only $9.95 a minute.
Yeah. The computers don't like the holy water too much. It doesn't work well.
When did you first get into modding? And that's submitted by Grackle.
My first mod was a game called Christian Strip Poker. As odd as that sounds. And what it
was. That's just weird.
This was back when I was 16, 17 years old, and I had this game on my Commodore 64 called Strip Poker, where you play against these very pixelated girls, so blocky it could have been Lego porn. And if you beat them in poker, they gradually take off more and more clothes. I saw this as a very bad thing because it didn't vibe well with the Christian ethics of my area, as well as the fact that I couldn't ever beat these girls because they were too good at poker. So I switched all the bitmaps around so that the girls started completely buck naked, and then you had to play them poker in order to get these poor girls dressed again, and I called it Christian Strip Poker.
Nice.
So often on this show we talk about reality and gaming and how the two don't meet. Well...
Right right now there is somebody out there with a strip poker game that's thinking, that's brilliant, I'm going to do that right now. Poor Grackle's going to be like, I can't believe that's how he answered my question.
After he says, I can't believe I'm listening to this show. From Kalman, there are four development phases. We're still in the fire stage, if I understand right, and I believe you mentioned that earlier there, Derek. What are the main focuses of the current and upcoming phases, Shadow and Ice, and what are the timelines?
Timelines, we don't know. This is a mod, and the wonderful thing about mods is we don't have to have any deadlines. We don't have any production manager or business development person that's telling us we have to ship on a certain day, so we can work on it for 2 weeks and then take a week off. It's awesome. So I don't know what the timelines are. We just finished up Fire, and right now we're doing the conversion of all the source to Beyond the Sword, and once that's done, then we'll start on Shadow, and the last phase is called Ice. The focus of Shadow is on four of the civilizations, which are the Siddar, the Savar Talfar, the Balserif, and the Malakim. There's going to be two religions that are going to be added in that phase, which are the Empyrean and the Council of Essus. And we're going to start adding in things like world-specific events, equipment, quests, and the Over-Council and the Under-Council and guilds. We've known for quite a while what Beyond the Sword was going to have in it. So anything that we were doing that was going to be like a Beyond the Sword thing, we put off until Shadow. So that's why you see a lot of the things kind of tie in real closely. Heck, if Alex was going to offer to code these things into the main game anyway, then he does a better job than we do. So let him do it, put it in the main game, and then we can use it and saves us all the work. Last phase is Ice, which is just scenarios that are going to be made for Fall from Heaven. I'm sure we'll do some tweaking, be adding in some new stuff to the main game at that stage too, just because we can't resist the temptation to always be in tweaking. At the end of Shadow, we should pretty much have Fall from Heaven 2 complete. The main game should all be done, and then Ice will all be around making scenarios for it and filling out the stories and things like that. I'm grateful to the people that are playing the bugged version as we go through the conversion and reporting back problem after problem after problem, and they've been very nice about it. And it's a little frustrating. You play a game for 2 hours, and it crashes in the middle, and you can't get any farther in it, but they're good about taking the screenshot and getting it off to us so we can get it fixed. So that's the hard work. My part's easy.
Derek goes to check the bug reports. I've been playing the bugged version, and I'm not sure, but I think my computer's possessed.
That is not a bug, that's a feature.
And speaking of people, I guess that kind of plays into the next question.
There's quite a few people on the Fall from Heaven 2 team. How did you recruit them?
I think we have 13 members right now. Everybody that's on the team was recruited by me. I've never accepted invitations for people that want to join. A lot of that is just because we get so many of them, and there's so many good people out there that have contributed a ton to Fall from Heaven. If I really was to put people on the team just based on contributions, we would have 50 to 100 people on there, because there's so many people that are doing great things for Fall from Heaven and have been with the mod for a year, year and a half, submitting ideas, making many mods based on Fall from Heaven, which I go and I steal ideas out of all the time. So they do great work. If you're a modder out there and you want to be involved in a mod project, there's a lot of great mods out there that would love nothing more than to have a couple members come and help them out and join their teams. And there's great places to do that. But Fall from Heaven, we're at 13 right now. And the more people we get, the harder it is to keep everybody kind of looking at the same goal and using the same vision. And it kind of makes it more difficult instead of easier to get things done.
So Zareth asks, if you can transfer your knowledge and experience of how things went back to the day before you started Fall from Heaven 2 or even Fall from Heaven 1, what would you handle differently?
There isn't much I'd change. It's been a lot more successful than I imagined, but there isn't any big mistakes that I felt that we ran into. I wish I could transfer my knowledge back there, just because a lot of the time I spent trying to get this stuff to work, I didn't know how to do it, so I was just guessing. I used to have a rule with my wife that I have about a 1 in 1,000 chance of getting any specific thing I'm trying to do to actually work. So all I have to do is I have to do it 1,000 times, and I will get it in one of those attempts.
From Mario Flag, are you guys considering developing further the world of Erebus and other projects? I'm particularly referring to writing a dark fantasy novel about Far From Heaven, and if the Fall From Heaven team has considered using its background for further projects, which goes beyond Civ 4 modding.
Nothing specific. Right now we're just focused on getting Fall From Heaven 2 done and as good as possible. I'm a writer at heart, so I love detailing those Pedia entries and writing all this backstory, and I've always wanted to get a book together at some point, just like I've always wanted to actually make a video game at some point, but right now it's nothing more than a gee, that would be nice kind of thing. I do like working with the Fall from Heaven team a lot, so once we do get all finished with Fall from Heaven 2, if I had to say something definite right now, I'd say our best bet is that we're going to look around at all the gaming engines that are available at whatever point we get finished, and if we started another project, we take a look and see what's out there at that point and decide where we want to go with it.
Makes sense.
Question by Drekmonger. Will the new features in BTS Beyond the Sword make Shadow or Ice any easier to build? If yes, how so? If not, why not?
Yes, definitely. Beyond the Sword has a lot of features that we wanted to have in Fall from Heaven 2. And there's a lot of things that they put in Beyond the Sword that we thought, boy, we have got to steal that idea. That is just too good. The events are going to be a major feature in Shadow. Hidden Nationality was always spec'd to be in Shadow, so when Firaxis said they were going to put it in, we were delighted. Even when I just did the conversion of Fall from Heaven from the vanilla version up to the Beyond the Sword version, I've been amazed at how much code I've just been able to cut. I don't have to convert it because Beyond the Sword already has it natively. A lot of the stuff they did to make the game easier to mod and to give modders new functionality is just incredible. I think we went from 400 units in vanilla Fall from Heaven down to 250, 270 in the Beyond the Sword version, just because a lot of the units we had were just different art definitions. And now that we can just assign that out on a sieve basis and not have to have a separate unit for every art definition, we cut 150 units out of the mod, which is great.
How much input, if any, did you and the Fall from Heaven team have into Beyond the Sword? And are there any features in Beyond the Sword that are present because you suggested them?
Firaxis is a great company to work with, and they had a very collaborative process, so it's very hard to tell you, oh, this was my idea and this was his idea. A lot of times, just like I was talking about with the community for Fall from Heaven, one person would get inspired and put some idea out there, and somebody else would change it and refine it, and it would go through this feedback before it would finally get implemented, and who was the person that was responsible for that idea? I don't know. I do know that the hard part was Alex's job, which was taking a look at all of these great ideas that a lot of talented people were giving him and picking out the ones that would be the most enjoyable to play and the way to implement that in the best way possible so it'd be the most fun. Specific things that stand out to me, the ability to play any leader with any civilization was actually my idea, and it was really weird for me because there was a conversation going on about a new feature that could be in the game, and then I posted about that, and Soren posted right back to that and said, oh, that's a good idea. So I thought, oh, that's a pretty good sign that they're going to do something with it. And then like 3 weeks later, I was reading one of Alex's interviews where he says, oh, yeah, and you can play any leader with any civilization. I thought, hey, look at that. That went really quick. So that was cool to see. The Python blocking, which sped up Beyond the Sword quite a bit over Civilization, was something that I had originally worked on and put a mod out there called Speed Mod, which blocked all the Python calls. In early versions of Beyond the Sword, it was running pretty slow. In fact, we were having a problem kind of testing it because the time between turns was so long. So I built a mod that blocked out all of the Python calls because I thought that's where the speed was being lost, and it dramatically improved the speed of the mod, and then Alex ended up putting that into Beyond the Sword in a much more efficient way than I had done in my mod.
I remember that.
Modular XML was actually something that I requested on Civ Fanatic's side, where John Schaefer came out and said, hey, we're thinking about making modular Python so you can just include just a change set of Python routines. And I had said, you know, modular XML instead of modular Python would be great because then we could have many mods and things like that. He said that would be too much work and they wouldn't be able to do that. And it wasn't until Impaler came onto the project that he took a look at that and did all the work required for it. And now we have modular XML in the game, which is fantastic. All of those came from the community, and Firaxis was really good at listening to our ideas and putting in a ton of stuff in Beyond the Sword.
I got here on my list. My question was, do you think you will ever dabble in creation of a modern or non-fantasy mod?
Yeah. I don't have any special pull towards fantasy mods, to be honest with you. I just picked that theme because it worked well for what we wanted to do, and I could kind of lean on the work that I'd done in my Dungeons & Dragons games, since I had a history and a mythology already built up from those. I don't have any problem working on a game with a different theme. I think science fiction, fantasy, post-apocalyptic, horror, all these are just as valid and have just as much potential for having fun games made out of them, just depending on what your goals for that game are.
In terms of other genres, did you say horror or horror? I kind of missed...
It was the first one.
I think there's potential for fun gaming in either format, so whatever you enjoy. I think my title on Civ Fanatics right now is Mod Pimp, so I guess that would work.
Just went to NC-17.
The one thing I would probably avoid is I don't like designing a game in a known universe because I feel like it really limits what you can do. If I decide, listen, I'm making a mod based on the commercials or anything, any random thing, and I want to add a new unit in that doesn't exist in that known universe, or I get an idea for a civilization and I want to change the way it works, but that's not the way it is in that series of books or that movie or what have you, then I feel like I don't have the ability to go and do that, or I'm going to get a lot of fans of that material that'll start yelling and screaming, and I don't need Charlemagne and Holy Roman Empire posts filling up our forum. I try to make up my own unique material so I don't have to fight those battles.
Good idea.
So, if you would like to sponsor the show...
Next question is by Kinjiru, and he asked, is there anything particular to working with the Civ 4 engines that you wish were different or would like to see changed?
That's a good question. Yeah, there's one big thing. I've tried to do it a couple times, and I've never been able to do it, and I know there's quite a few very talented programmers that tried to do it, and it was on the SDK wish list from especially Dale, and I really wanted it, and it didn't get into Beyond the Sword, and I don't know if it's even possible to do. It is dual maps. We really wanted the ability to set up more than one map so you can switch between them and the AI would understand how to deal with those.
Like Test of Time.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, but nobody's been able to figure out a way to go ahead and get that implemented. But if I had one thing, one wish that I could get into Civ 4, that would be it.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Dale, my good friend Dale, he wanted to know, have you tried any other mods and or scenarios in BTS? And if so, what ideas from them did you like?
I played all the mods in BTS a little bit. I mostly played the main game because I wanted to give a lot of feedback to Firaxis on what I thought about it and things to change and all that kind of stuff. Not that it was particularly valuable feedback, as some of the others did a much better job than I did. But of the scenarios that I played, when I wasn't playing Fall from Heaven stuff, I played a lot of Rise and Fall of Civilization, is one that I typically will pull out. When I want to play a Civilization game, I play Rise and Fall of Civilization. I enjoy that one a lot.
So did you ever think about working in the game industry full-time?
Not seriously. Been contacted by two gaming companies that said they had job openings, and they wanted me to submit a resume to them, and I've turned both down because I think modding is awesome. We don't have deadlines. We can do whatever we want. There's no business requirements here. I have a unit in the game that Cesareth made, which is a barbarian unit that fights with one of his opponents. He fights with them like a big meaty flail. He has them held by the ankles, and he will beat you with the corpse of another unit. And I don't think that we could get away with doing stuff like that if we were in a professional mod. So as a modder, I can do all of this stuff that I couldn't do if I was a professional, and I wouldn't want to give that up. Now, of course, the professionals do get the paycheck out of it, which is kind of cool. But I'll keep my day job and do my work there and then mod in the evenings and on the weekends, and it works out okay. So no, not really. I like being a modder rather than a professional designer.
Well, if you see some of the stuff that the Rockstar gets away with, I think a demon fighting with corpses should be fun.
From Darth Cycle, considering the high quality of the mod, how much time do you typically spend on it on a weekly basis, and how does it affect the other aspect of your life, work, family? Before you answer it, Derek, we got a voicemail. Yes, someone actually called in with a question for Kale. I'm going to send Derek the phone number of where that phone call originated from and see if he recognizes it.
That's my home phone number.
This is Kale's wife. I have a question for Kale. He seems to spend a lot of time on his mod. How is his marriage doing?
Well, if anybody knows how much time I spend on this mod, it's her. Probably 15 to 20 hours a week, usually one weekend day that I'll do nothing but work on the mod and a couple hours every night. So it's a lot of time. What really allowed me to focus on modding and really get the first version of Fall from Heaven 2 out was that my work sent me to England for 3 months. So I'm in a strange foreign country with no family, no friends, just a job to do. They gave me this nice little house to work out of, and most importantly, they gave me high-speed internet access. So I had a place to just sit, do nothing but mod for 3 months. So that really allowed me to spend a lot more time than I could in normal life with a wife and kids and all that kind of stuff going on.
Oh, cool. Brian Reynolds style.
And that number for Derek is 555-555-5555.
Put it on speed dial.
800 Christian
football. 95 a minute. Okay, I think the next question, person who asked it would like Wouter to ask the question. Some nerve.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Maniac's question. He wants you to ask that question because he thinks you're going to pronounce the word properly.
Okay, so Maniac wants to know, how the hell do you pronounce Lukuirp? I gave it my best shot.
I could have done that.
Personally, when I read the word, I just pronounce it gnomes, which is kind of where I stole the concept from. But if I was forced to pronounce it, in my mind, when I do it, it's Luchirp. And I don't know if that's right or all, because it is a real word. It's from Celtic mythology, and it means little bodies, which are kind of like dwarves, but not quite dwarves. They're kind of fairy creatures. We get a lot of this stuff from Fall from Heaven comes out of Celtic mythology, because not a lot of people are very familiar with it. And I think it has a really cool feel to it.
If it's Celtic, it's probably just pronounced John.
No doubt. Yep, you're probably right.
Send all hate mail, too.
Wouter duck.
Yes, please send it there, because I don't own it.
Interesting how this question would fall to me. Have you ever listened to Polycast in the past? If so, what are your favorite episodes or segments? And if not, why not?
I do listen to Polycast from time to time. Maybe because of my failing memory, my favorite episode was the last one, because it's the one I listen to most frequently. But it was an interview with John Schaefer, and I thought he had a lot of very cool things to say, my favorite being that he liked the Fall from Heaven mod and Beyond the Sword a lot. In my own self-interest, I really liked that podcast. My least favorite podcast was one, well, I don't remember who it was that said it, but they were talking about Fall from Heaven. And it was either Impaler or Wouter, somebody with a Minnesota accent, and they said something about Fall from Heaven. They said, well, I don't like fantasy mods. And I thought, oh, no, don't say that.
I have a Minnesota accent?
But that's as much criticism as I have to say. Yeah, you guys are from Minnesota, right? Am I placing you correctly?
No, I'm from the Netherlands.
Let's go across the pond.
It's close, but...
You got to understand, I'm an American, so our knowledge of anything outside the U.S. is very limited.
I'll take it as a compliment, if my English is that good.
You obviously have never talked to anybody from Minnesota.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say that.
Oh, he pissed me so bad. I'm from Wisconsin. My accent's probably the closest of anybody here. Maybe Dan's.
Hey.
Yeah, that would definitely have been me. Fantasy is not really my thing. But yeah, I can definitely recognize the skill involved in making Fall from Heaven, but it's really not my type of thing. I don't see myself playing it a whole lot, but it's definitely a very cool mod.
Oh, sure. Now that I'm on the podcast, you have nice things to say. I see how it is.
PR, that's what we do. PR.
Exactly. Don't worry. Next week I'll be bitching about it again.
No doubt.
Well, there's one more question.
Yep.
Okay. Derek, if you and Rye were to have a fight, who would win and why?
It depends on the conditions of the fight. If it were team against team, I think the Fall from Heaven team could take them just based on sheer numbers. If it were all the resources of our mods against each other, then Rai is going to win because he has like nuclear weapons over there and I have fire breathe and lizards. That's all I got. But if it's directly between Rai and I, sumo style, in a big pit full of jello wearing only, you know, the...
Whoa, hey, I thought we were moving away from the Triple X stuff here.
It's a family site.
Well, there's nothing wrong with sumo. You got your big sumo diaper thong on and battling out there in a cage match. I don't know who would win, but I think the ladies would enjoy it an awful lot.
I know I would.
Interesting, because I contacted Rye and asked him the same question. I said, Rye, if you and Kale had a fight, who would win and why? He didn't have time to record his answer, but he did have time to type it out. He sent it to me. His response is, quote, of course I would win. I'm the Italian stallion of Civ Fanatics.
Well, there you go. I can't argue with that.
But Kale has a real chance of reversing the outcome if he calls all the Fall from Heaven team to his aid. They'll outnumber me, unquote.
Well, we agree then. Who has played Fall from Heaven before? The public mod?
I played it back right when you released it.
All right. I'll give you three questions to test your Fall from Heaven knowledge. And they're multiple choice. Each of the hunters in Fall from Heaven each hunts with an animal companion. Do the hunters from the Siddhar civilization hunt with frogs, hyenas, or rabid weasels?
Well, I think I can hopefully mark out the last one. I'm going to guess hyenas.
You are absolutely correct.
Good job. Yay!
If you'd asked Harrison that question in our community, surely he would have said frogs.
There actually are frogs in Fall from Heaven, so it's a bit of a trick question, but he still got it right.
Woo!
Question number two. Which of the following isn't a character in Fall from Heaven? A demon named Chuckles, a werewolf with a bladder control problem, or Boobos, which is the scientific term for the swelling of the testicles?
Well, I've had that one before, and I find that personally offensive to me. I'm going to have to pass this one to Wooter.
All right, Wooter, what do you think?
I'm going to go for Chuckles.
Nope, I'm afraid you're wrong. There is a demon named Chuckles in Fall from Heaven. The correct answer was there is no werewolf with a bladder control problem.
Oh, shoot.
But there needs to be.
Yes, there probably should be. All right, Tony. Got one question left, one wrong, one right.
All right.
Do Balseriff catapults fire rocks, giant skulls, or cows?
I am going to say skulls. That would be my guess.
No, that is not correct. The correct answer was cows. They actually fire cows, complete with the whole cow flying over the battlefield sound effect.
That is awesome.
Exactly.
Oh, I guess Tony didn't win whatever the prize was.
Oh.
That's too bad. Tony was really looking forward to playing Christian strip poker, but now he's not going to.
Please, send me a copy of it.
Derek will probably want to talk about this. At nauseam. Game Flood contest winners.
Are you suggesting that I spent too much time responding to those questions?
No, I just thought you wanted to bask in your glory of winning this category.
I was actually worried in that contest, mostly because Rye was in the same category we were, and I thought, oh no. But, you know, I wasn't too bad with it. I don't mind losing to Rye. His mod's a blast, and if we're second behind Rise and Fall, that's fine with me. But they found a way out of it. They gave Rye first place in one of the other categories, and you can't win more than one category. So he got first place in one, and we got first place in another, so it worked out. We both made out okay.
Yeah.
We took money from that and donated it to UNICEF.
Wow, very nice.
That's cool.
In the second place, RTS mod. RTS mod.
Yeah, I think that's funny. According to the contest, we are the best real-time strategy mod out there. So, hey, we didn't even know we were one, but okay.
Nice.
Take that, Age of Empires.
Yeah. They must have thought it was turn-based until they started playing it, and then it was real-time because the demons had taken over their computer. Got news? Email news at abolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, Snoopy369, Alexander I, or Luminatus via Bolton's forums at abolton.net/forums.
In the modcast, we talk about hot issues that have happened in the forums.
The The only girl unit in Civ. Girls playing Civ! Any excuse.
So we're talking about the spy?
There's a spy and a settler chick, I'm pretty sure.
There is. In Age of Ice, there's actually quite a few female units.
Would there be any other female units in any other mods? Would you happen to know that information?
Well, nobody has checked the gender on those creatures running around Afterworld, and personally, I don't want to look.
This thread really kind of exploded, and the user that started it says, actually, instead of commenting on the lack of women warriors or clerics, I believe she, being his girlfriend who made the original comment, she was making satirical reference to the fact that women have different intrinsic information gaining abilities. Sayam actually said in his or her opinion, we're not sure, it's even more sexist to have only the spy is female than to leave females out altogether. I don't think that's true.
I'm sure Firex has spent a lot of time in meetings talking about how they could best exploit women with this expansion. I mean, I'm just curious. What do people think is going on behind the scenes? I suspect at some point there's just an artist who decides he has to make a unit, so he makes a unit. That's it. There's no deeper thought into it than that.
That's right.
Coincidence?
Yeah. There was a comment about someone should make a graphical mod where all the units are replaced by stylized females in risque but completely ineffective combat attire. And then someone responded, you don't need to wait for that. Just go play World of Warcraft.
Nice.
There's actually a mod like that for Cult of Power, so if anyone's interested.
We're still a long way away from anybody making a Golden Girls mod that has erotic versions of all the Sea Arthur, Betty White running around fighting each other.
Oh, no.
But maybe someday.
Reworking Civ 4's vassal system. Civilization Fanatic Center user Brad55 is not happy with Civ 4's vassal system and is looking for it to be reworked in the next patch. Well, reworking the vassal system would not be patch material, but anyway. Brad55 argues that, quote, a civilization should only be able to become a vassal state to a civ or civs that are attacking it and not to some distant non-participant. This is highly unrealistic and a big pain in the arse. Unquote. Well, I believe this to be, in fact, quite realistic, but do agree that it can be a pain in the arse when you're not on the receiving end of either gaining a vassal or becoming a vassal to save your neck. Personally, I don't believe the vassal system needs to be reworked at all, but to address this, just tweak it ever so slightly. Should one civ come under attack and be granted vassalization by another civilization, the master in that relationship automatically contacts you, or whomever, to inform you of this fact, and prompts you to sign a ceasefire or a peace treaty, or they will declare war.
Oh, I like that.
Perhaps whether the offer is a ceasefire or a peace treaty could depend, at least in part, on your relationship with the master into the game up to that point. And maybe if the master is already furious with you, or perhaps even annoyed, depending upon who they are, then maybe there is no offer of either.
One thing I don't like about the vassal system is whether or not I was playing and I had mixed leaders on, so I'm not even going to go with the names of the civs, but I was stopping the crap out of the yellow civ, and then the red civ snuck them as the vassal. While I should have been the one who should have been bugging them for capitulation, they got the vassalage, and I was all, am I going to reload it?
I like your suggestion. I think of it a little bit from the game design perspective. I love the fact that the civilization that's about to get beat does something rather than just die. It goes and vassalizes itself to try to save itself. But from a game design perspective, I wonder if it isn't better off for the game to just let that player die off rather than stick around forever so that you can kind of clear the board and continue your war. I think if I had to go one way or the other, I'd stick with it just like it is. And I like your suggestion a lot, too, to give the player the option when it comes up. For players that don't like the way that vassals kind of save themselves by aligning with more powerful enemies, just turn off vassalization. Of course, that means you can't have them either, but it would work.
Yeah. Welcome to the Senate. In this section, we talk about game strategy. Best Civ 4 National Wonder Combos. CFC user Just a Warlord is looking for advice on how to specialize his cities with National Wonder Combination. Solomui. Oh, talk about words you're having a hard time pronouncing. He recommends both Heroic Epic and West Point. That way you avoid the diminishing returns on production, maximize your number of highly promoted units out of the box, and can use the Ironworks city for wonder building without wasting Heroic Epic during those turns.
That is a pretty good strategy. I never even thought of that.
In a related thread, Danfor recommends the Red Cross late in the game instead of the heroic epic, but... I don't know. I like building up my culture, and Heroic Epic will give me +4, whereas Red Cross will just give me +2. Red Cross in later game will also get us +1 scientist, a great people point, but by that point, we're pretty well along in the tech tree, and for me and my style of play, I think I'd still stick with the Heroic Epic over Red Cross. Not that I wouldn't not build Red Cross, but Heroic Epic first.
I think Red Cross is a little underpowered, because if you're a power player, you only need one fully upgraded medic per stack. And even with medic 3 now, you don't even need that. You can have 3 stacks next to each other, all healing.
And Underdog, in part, talks about National Epic, combining it with either the Globe Theater or the National Park. The National Park requiring Beyond the Sword. So I haven't had the opportunity to build a National Park yet.
I think I did.
Oh.
I've stopped chopping forests ever since they took that chop exploit out of Warlords. So I preserved the forest, and now these forest preserves with environmentalism and with that wonder, you can have a truly healthy city come out of it. And you can just make that city huge if you can, you know? Especially if there's a lot of water tiles.
I never even thought of combining Oxford University with anything, but Francis Marion suggests Oxford plus Wall Street in a capital, running representation, bureaucracy, and a whole bunch of merchant specialists.
Hmm. What would that do?
With bureaucracy, you get +50% gold and hammer production in your capital.
Oh, yeah.
Cha-ching.
I'm not a fan of bureaucracy. That's been established on a previous show. But I am a fan of representation.
Oh, yeah.
Oxford University itself gives you +100% science in that city, 4 culture, and 1 scientist great people point. Wall Street will give you +100% gold in this city, and +1 merchant great people point. Actually, that is a pretty decent combination.
Solid. That's really solid.
And then if you add in the civic benefits on top of it, ooh.
I like that one. I'm actually going to try to use that one. That sounds good.
Well played.
CFC user Cephlock asks, do any of you ever build a city that has any desert, ice, mountain, or tundra within its radius, either immediately or will once its borders expand? How do you factor resources in your decision?
If I have some place where I can go fishing, it doesn't really matter so much if there's tundra or something because my city's still getting food. And with a harbor and a lighthouse, you can still make it profitable to have a city there.
Definitely. Never, ever, ever chop a forest down in a tundra or there's one on ice, too, because those forests are much more productive than the base terrain.
Yes, get some lumber mills on them.
Mm-hmm.
If they're next to a river, because then you get +1 commerce, you might want to wait till you get to railroad, because then you can get +1 hammer.
Yeah. I have to admit that there's desert terrain and ice cities won't have any chance of getting strong, though, until those late-game improvements come in with the lumber mill and the water wheel and whatnot.
Yeah, I think of all of these, desert is the one that is really a gamble, but the damage potentially to you if you don't have it, which is in getting oil in the game. I know sometimes if you don't have that, you kind of think, oh, well, maybe I'll get it in the ocean, but if you hope to obtain it solely from the ocean... I think that's particularly risky when you have to wait till plastics to be able to build an offshore platform to even use it. I've been in a situation like that, and I had an enemy coming towards me. They're upgrading their units. I need to strike now and get a city where I'm going to have oil now because I'm probably not going to exist in this game by the time I'm able to build an offshore platform, let alone then start building up my units that are powered by oil.
I just had the exact same scenario happen to me last game I played that you mentioned. No ground oil, only water oil.
Ugh. And I guess desert can also be attractive if you have some floodplains.
Oh, yeah. Settler farm.
Especially if you got some floodplains, then you got some hills nearby. Oh, boy, that's definitely something to go for. Or if you're not opposed to whipping.
Oh, I'm always down to whip it. Okay, R-rated maybe that one.
As for ice and mountains, what nice things can we say here?
Nothing about ice, but mountains are kind of useful. There's enough of them.
As kind of a...
wall.
For strictly land invasion?
Yeah, I just played the game I was talking to, had no oil. Also had my entire enemy Civcon in, blocked off to 2 passes. Ooh.
I'm not a very expert player, and I don't look at the kind of nuts and bolts that you guys are talking about here when I look where I should place a city at, just kind of put them where I want to, but I'm typically looking more at the military point of where that city is sitting. If I have an area that's exposed and I don't want an AI player dumping a city there because that'll give them a way to get into my empire very easily, I'll put a city there just to block it, even if it is on tundra or there isn't any resources up around it.
Politan University.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if people do want to learn how to play safe better, there is a good way for competitive playing to have other people give you advice.
And we would find that where? Jeez.
Politan.net
really?
Slash forums?
Wow. How could I figure that out?
I don't know.
Politan University. Sometimes I wonder.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-659. 301-637-POLY.
And for Europe, 44-020-7871-7659. 44-020-7871-POLY.
Or you can Skype us at the Polycast.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Polycast.apolton.net.
Welcome to a special interview segment here on Polycast, the official podcast of Apolton Civilization Site. I'm one of your co-hosts, Daniel Thank You Quick. For decades, fantasy and science fiction artist Greg Hildebrandt helped bring to life memorable moments in these fandoms, including illustrations for Magic the Gathering, the popular The Lord of the Rings calendars, and the first Star Wars movie poster with his brother Tim. Individually, the Franklin Mint and Lennox have issued Greg's work on collector's plates, figurines, dolls, and swords. He has illustrated 15 classics, including The Wizard of Oz, Aladdin, Robin Hood, Dracula, and Phantom of the Opera. You've probably heard of these. There are more than 3.5 million copies in print of the combined titles. The New York Times has said, "Fortunate the child or adult who receives a gift of classics richly illustrated by Greg Hildebrandt." We at Polycast are fortunate to speak to Greg about these efforts and, most specifically, how Civilization fans can obtain a copy of one of his latest fantasy works. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Hey, nice to be here.
First, are there any highlights in your biography that you would like to add or expand on?
My brother and I came to recognition internationally with the Lord of the Rings calendars in 1976, 77, 78, but we had illustrated 50, 60, 100 children's books. Before that, we made documentary films for 6 years on world hunger, which was a completely different gig. And before that, we started our career in Detroit, where we're from, at a animation company. The Jam Handy Organization was an industrial film producer. I'm painting 12-foot-long murals of superheroes for an art show that's coming up in History of Superheroes. It'll be at a local museum here in New Jersey. And a film crew was here yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Chip Cronkite, who was Walter Cronkite's son, is a documentary filmmaker. I had a camera crew over my shoulder as I painted. Now, that really made me nervous. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I can only imagine.
I normally don't paint in public. I mean, I'm not one of those kind of display guys with painting. I know a lot of people are really comfortable with that. But I've always been kind of like old-fashioned. It's very private.
It makes you wonder whether you should turn to the camera and say, "Would you like me to comment on what I'm doing right now?"
Right, exactly. They shoot hours of film and comes down to 60 seconds, right?
Yeah. Greg was commissioned by game publisher 2K Games to draw a fantasy poster for inclusion in retail copies of Civilization IV Gold Edition, which places Civ IV and its first expansion, Warlords, under one title. Now, we say fantasy because it features Mongolian ruler Genghis Khan and Russian czarist Catherine about to engage in one-on-one combat in the foreground, with the bombing of both the Statue of Liberty and the pyramids by stealth fighters in the background. Greg, you have said that, quote, "My career has taken me in many directions. This is the first time I have traveled into a realm where civilizations clash, not just in my painting, but in the context of time. Being chosen to paint this piece for Civilization's game poster was a challenge and an honor," unquote. Can you tell us how you were approached to participate in this effort and what elements, if any, changed from that initial conception?
Jean told me, my business manager and agent, she called me and said that the Civilization was looking for an artist to interpret the game. Let's say an artist that was known already in a particular field for whatever, fantasy, I suppose. And I said, well, that's great. I mean, for me, it's like I'm always looking to get into the white zone, That is to say, the place that I don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like keeps me moving forward and discovering new things. And then we had a conference call with a bunch of people, and we started kicking around ideas. And it sort of like evolved. Can't exactly remember who said what in terms of who should be facing off. But when it came to Castle the Great and Genghis Khan, I said, that's fantastic. I love the contrast and the juxtaposition.
Mm-hmm.
There was also the aspect of not only these two time frames clashing or interacting, but also to show the possibility of the extent of the game that is all time frames. So we started kicking around different things, Statue of Liberty, pyramids, and I just got turned on. I loved the whole wild juxtaposition of all the elements. And then I added those bombers from Vietnam and the Sherman tank going over the bridge. I wanted to show these different time frames in terms of the hardware juxtaposed to Middle Ages and juxtaposed to the 1700s. It was just cool. It was great. Then I started researching it using Civilization's websites, and then we did our own research and started to get costumes and found a great film on Catherine, young Catherine, that was made for television. And the costumes just blew me away. I loved that stuff. In this case, we kind of improvised with rented stuff and put it together ourselves. And then I got models and exposed to everybody. The challenge was to keep it unified, to have it be like you could see a single scene. It's all done in a cohesive lighting setup,
mm-hmm.
so that it looks like you went outside and you saw this thing, bam. Then for me, it's like, well, what's the optimum lighting setup that I need to do a painting? I love rim lighting and backlighting, so I shot everybody outside with the sun up high behind so I could get the nice edge light and fill blue light from the sky and bounce light. So then I kept that uniformity from foreground with the two central figures, Genghis and Catherine, moving out into the distance.
Colors are really rich in the contrast between the violence that we see on the ground, whereas in the sky, with just the clouds and the blue, it seems quite calm.
Yeah, that's what I wanted. Was that the beauty of that typical blue and white sky that we all see everywhere and all the stuff that goes on here on planet Earth that we do to each other. I know the game extends way beyond warfare. I know that. Not that I'm that much aware of it because I'm still like an old-fashioned guy. I'm a caveman pretty much. I'm still a Cro-Magnon. I work with paint and sticks with hair glued on the end of them.
Well, that's okay. I remember reading in the bio of you and Tim how, I believe at the age of two, you were already coloring within the lines. Well, Greg, I still have trouble coloring within the lines, so that's...
Well, that was my mother. I talked to my mother. She's still alive, and she's like 94. Because everybody asked me that, and they used to ask him that. I'm like, well, when did you guys start doing this? And she said that she was aware of the fact that we were very precise at 2 years old. What I remember at 2 years old, around 2 years old, and it was eating a pack of Crayola crayons to find out whether or not colors tasted different.
Oh. I think my favorite comment, where they said they liked the atmosphere of the show because we pretended to like each other. So, just for you, in the next episode, we're going to pretend to hate each other.
Nice. That is hilarious.
Derek, do you have anybody else who used to play Dungeons & Dragons with who is actually on your mod team now?
Nope. None of the people on the mod team were original players in the game, which is kind of unfortunate. A lot of little jokes and homages are in the game to those players.
Oh, I thought maybe you had a falling out and they said it's either Dungeons & Dragons or Civ. Your choice.
No.
I've had that problem before.
I go through these periods where I really get into things, and D&D had kind of fallen off just because I got too busy with work and everything. So I did D&D for a while, and then I did Magic the Gathering, and then I did hobbyist animal gynecology, and then I was off to EverQuest, and then I got into modding, which worked really well. But I get really focused on it for a year or two, and then I typically go off to another hobby.
Did you say gynecology?
What?
Animal gynecology, you know, mostly squirrels, typical around the house stuff.
That's not typical, Derek.
Okay. Like, what?
I'm just testing to see if anybody's actually listening to all the stuff I'm babbling about.
And I was scared.
Meanwhile, we have to send guys with white coats over to Derek's house.
Polycast, now rated triple X. Oh, yes. Let's try to raise the rating of this show a little bit. Girls playing Sith!
Yeah. I think it's a little bit too late for that.
The rating for this episode will be R.
Well, it's back down from the NC-17 we got a little earlier.
That's true. We're in a real-time rating system. You've been listening to episode 23 of Polycast, the official podcast of a Polton Civilization site. I've been joined by Wouter.
Bye.
Also been joined by Tony Keel, Garrett Sidzaka.
Bye.
Mark Anderson, who goes by Tala Turtle.
Goodbye.
And Kale, Derek Paxton.
Goodbye. Thanks for having me.
Christian Strip Poker.
Demon Sporting Computers.
Mackie is going to be so sad that she missed this one.
Oh, I know. She's going to be devastated. Record date August 18th, 2007. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV Warlords and Beyond the Sword expansion packs. Fall from Heaven trailer music courtesy kale.sifanatics.net. For Axis game theme, their copyright. Copyright 2007, a Polton Civilization site at apolton.net.